This is Fresh Air. I'm Terry Gross. Andrew Caroma founded an independent radio station in his country, Sierra Leone, 8 years ago, during its civil war. He now runs two stations. The one in Freetown, the capital city, has been burned down twice. The station in Bo, Sierra Leone's second largest city, has been attacked with gunfire and was temporarily closed down and forced into exile. That's just part of the punishment Caroma has faced for keeping listeners informed about corruption and atrocities. Caroma is often on the air, broadcasting from his station in Bo. He's one of the investigative reporters who reports under the house name of Mr. Owl. Caroma grew up in the bush and has studied in the U.S. at the University of Texas and Duke University. I spoke with him last week during his trip to the United States to study public radio here. I asked him about covering Sierra Leone's democratic election in 1996, when the rebels were mounting a campaign of terror to scare people away from voting. As part of this campaign, the rebels amputated the arms of thousands of men, women, and children. I asked Caroma how his station in Bo covered the story.
On the day of election, that was when we were on the air telling people to go out and vote. It is your right. You need it. You need a government. The military government need to go out. We don't need a military government. It's not democratic. That day, we were shot at. The combatants came up to the station. It was just about 100 yards away. And the man who was standing beside me as a security was killed. I mean, this was like 2 feet away from me. And bullets kept coming up. So we had to tilt the microphone over the speaker of the VHF radio. We ran into the bush, and we were still broadcasting from the bush where guns were being shot, I mean, fired. But the message at that time was to tell the people that go out and vote, because our broadcast was getting to the villages where voting was taking place. We didn't want that incident closer to our station to stop that. So we continued. People were being amputated. In fact, very close to the station, there was a village next door, not too far away. We could hear the people screaming, but we still continued to be on the air to broadcast.
Did you try to warn people about the possibility of amputation?
Yes, we did. When we go on the air and we get information about danger areas, we tell people about those danger areas, and we are able to tell them where safer areas are, due to the interviews we conduct.
Do you still see a lot of people walking around now who were amputated during that 96 election?
Oh, yes. Children, women. I personally have witnessed amputations. I thought I was going to be the next. We've seen these things happen, and we've interviewed victims. I mean, we are talking about, at the time, blood is dripping from the arm or the leg. We've interviewed them. We have also had the opportunity to interview the perpetrators, why they do it.
What are some of the things the perpetrators have told you?
Most of these people were just senseless. They didn't even know. They were just saying that the civilians don't like them, they don't support them, so there is going to be Operation No Living Thing. So I will ask them questions like, then how will you govern no living thing? I said, well, until we find out that people change. That's like, but is that the way you're going to get people to change? These are the hard questions that we ask. And the reason why you ask them is because you want them to give out pertinent information that people can know how these people perceive themselves.
Now, I understand that during the military takeover in 1997, that the citizens of Bo, where you live, refused to accept the rule of the rebels who had taken over. And that your and that your radio station became the only source of information for the city, because the city was basically cut off from what, the rest of the country during this 9-month rule of the military?
Yes. It was a matter of deciding whether we should resume broadcasting or not. Because that area was being protected by the Civil Defense Force, so it was safe. It was safer for us to broadcast from there. And we used that radio station to tell the people that a military government is not your answer. To tell the people that you have the right to elect a civilian government, and that don't support that government at all. That was very brave of us. And we did that and did that. We became successful. People had a sit-down strike. Nobody went to work. We had to go into exile finally and then resume broadcast again in 1998 when the democratically elected government was reinstalled.
Sierra Leone is a very dangerous place to practice journalism. It's probably particularly dangerous for you. You're both the founder of a radio station and an investigative reporter on that radio station. How do you protect yourself? Do you carry a gun?
No. No, you don't. What you carry is your ID to show that you are a reporter for the radio station.
But that's part of the reason why they want to hurt you, because they know you're a reporter.
In most cases, when they want to hurt me, I tell you, if you hurt me, nobody is going to know what you want to do. I am here. You don't pay me. But I know you want people to know why you're caught in their hands. You want people to know why you are burning their houses. So if you kill me, how will people know how you perceive? That has been personally my survival.
No, tell me. Let me stop you. Has that actually worked sometime?
Yes, it has worked. Me and I have a very young wife, very beautiful wife, with two young children. When my wife gave birth to my son, Anel, we decided to take the children to show to our parents. But there was no way we can afford to go by air. But because I believe that I can go through the West Side Boys, these were soldiers that were recalcitrant, very notorious guys. I set on the journey. I put my family in the car. Before I could start the car, my son, Abdul Karim, 5 years old by then, said, "Daddy, let's pray before we start the car." So I said, "Okay." So he prayed for the trip, that the trip would be okay. God, please guide my father, guide us, protect us on the way. After that, I started the car. And when we were abducted that day, it came into my mind. For about 2 hours, I was negotiating our release. I was letting them to know that I'm not there as an enemy. If I'm an enemy, why would I come to you? Why would I come through your area anyway? I'm just a journalist. I work for Kiss Radio. Don't you know Kiss Radio? Don't you listen to Kiss Radio? One or two people said, "Yes, you don't like us. You tell us that we are killing people." I said, "But yes, you're killing people, but the other side is also killing people. So, but you have a reason why you're doing it. You're just not killing people." He said, "Yes." They reason out to me. So I said, "Well, do you want an interview? Because I need to let the people know what you are doing these things for." That saved me. The ID card that I'm a journalist, and especially so the institution that I work for that believe in the truth.
So did you interview the people who were interrogating you?
Yes, I interviewed them. And again, you see, they must rely on you. I told them that I will air their messages. I aired it out, and then I went to the government side, interviewed the Minister of Defense, and he also granted the interview. It was very nice that he actually appealed to them to see reason to stop the atrocities, and that if they don't, then they will pursue them anyway. So you see, these messages go from one side to another side, but being in between as a journalist, the only thing that will save you is the truth. And I think you must identify yourself that, yes, this is what I do.
So the rebels who had abducted you and your family, when you interviewed them, what was one of the main points that they wanted to make in that interview?
They wanted to let the people know that the government owed them salaries. They wanted to let the people know that the government is illegitimate, and that they want a transition government that will protect them. That if they don't have a government that will protect them, then they will continue because they were afraid of revenge. They have caused so much atrocity. These are the guys who burned down Freetown, January 6, 7, and 8, who caused the worst atrocities in the world. I mean, we're talking about killing, burning children, burning grandparents in their houses. Within 3 days, they burned about over 5,000 people. These are the people I'm talking about. So they got a chance to tell the world or the country that they were doing this because they were, first of all, the government don't like them, the people don't like them, and they want a government of a transition government that will protect them from revenge. And I put that on the air.
So you put that on the air, and then you interviewed the government and put their response on the air.
Yes, ma'am.
Did you get any reaction from the rebels after the broadcast?
No, it keep going. You solve one problem today, and you have a bunch of problems. You have news coming from other areas. So it's like it keep going. It's the mission. It's the journey. You keep going until you find out that peace comes. And we were very happy when UN came.
When the UN
and
came?
I knew that was going to be the answer when UN came in.
What difference do you think the United Nations has made in Sierra Leone?
Three international institutions made, communities made a big difference. The United States government, by threatening to prosecute all perpetrators for crime against humanity, that was the one of the strongest, because I remember interviewing Ambassador Schaefer, who was ambassador at large for war crimes. Then the British government and the American government really told these people that this is wrong that you are doing. The United Nations deployed the largest peacekeeping force ever deployed anywhere in the world. And they were ready to make sure that peace returned to the country. I think they really made a very, very remarkable impact on the country. Today, as I'm sitting here, I made a phone call this morning. Disarmament is going on, this demobilization is going on, and people are reintegrating. We must coexist.
My guest is Andrew Kroma, the founder of two independent radio stations in his country, Sierra Leone. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Andrew Kroma, and he founded and runs a radio station in Sierra Leone, in the city of Bo. And the radio station specializes in investigative reporting, in reporting on the rebels, reporting on the government, and there's been a lot of reprisals against the radio station because it has angered people on all the sides in its attempt to tell the truth. What are some of the reports you have done lately that are very risky and controversial?
Like, for instance, there is massive corruption going on in the country, and we think that must stop. We have put on air, revealed, I could say, acts of corruption by the government. We have revealed serious atrocities that were usually unknown to other people, that we exposed this, and we figure those are very dangerous. There was a recent one with us and the power company. We have an arrangement with the power company, the electricity company, to provide us electricity, and we cannot trade. If they come in with announcement, we hear the announcement, and then they deduct it from how much we owe them, simply because the economy is really, really bad. You cannot depend on advertisement revenue for operation. This time around, there was storm, and an electric pole was knocked down. The cable, naked cable, was lying down there. A child was killed.
A child was killed?
Yes. By the live wire, he was killed. So we reported that strictly in the news. And then Mr. Al went on the air to
I should explain. Mr. Al is your investigative journalist persona.
Yeah, Mr.
That's
Al
the
is
name
the
you use.
Yeah, that's the name we use. It's Mr. Al. Mr. Al, we even see what is happening and describe it there and then, and it's on the air. So people really listen to it. It's one of our most listened programs. This time around, Mr. Al reported that BKPS must be held liable because we found out that they were informed about the live wire lying down there and they did not disconnect it. The school children, after the funeral ceremony, were returning home and they still saw the live wire lying down there. They demonstrated. We reported that straight live reporting. And then what hurt the light company was we issued a notice for people to stay away from the area. That was one. Secondly, we also told the people that you will not have electricity in that area until that problem is solved. The light company did not see that as something we were doing in their favor. They threatened to disconnect us if we don't pay them the arrears. We were owing them 4,630,000 leones. That's equivalent to about $2,500.
So because you covered the story about how the live wire killed a child and the electric company wasn't doing anything about it. Because you covered the story, you might lose your electricity.
Yes, they gave us a deadline to pay. And that amount is a huge amount of money for us to pay.
So what are you going to do to try to raise the money?
When I go back, it's still unknown. I've been here for 3 weeks studying how national public radios work. When I go back, that's the issue I'm going to handle. We have a very old Russian generator sitting there. It consumes about 2 hours of diesel fuel an hour, and that bites a lot into our revenue.
Now, I know that one of the investigative stories your station has covered had to do with prostitution. What was the story?
We found out something very revealing in there, that the men would love to have sex with a prostitute and pay the prostitute more if they don't protect themselves by using condom. If they use condom, then they will pay less. This lady was actually evacuated from a war zone by a police officer who was having sex with the lady as well. And we found out that was not proper. So we decided to investigate. Then we found out that this lady, in fact, was infected with AIDS, HIV. So we tried to find out, how did you contact this aid? We found out that she was rescued from the war zone and then taken to her brother, where she was kept. For her to survive, she had to get into sex with men. And to her surprise, the men would choose to pay her more if they don't use condom and pay her less if they use condom. Now, we decided to let the men know that they are responsible for the increase in the spread of AIDS. That's what we got from covering the story on prostitution.
How are men reacting to stories like that, where they're being held accountable for not using condoms?
Well, these men are usually illiterate, uneducated. So we try to let them know these facts in their own languages. We're working on it. We have 3 programs that deal with family issues. You know, the family in Sierra Leone has been broken apart. We have a youth program, which is actually a children's program. We have women to women's program. So issues like that are discussed in the women's to women's program, so that the women discuss it and they are guided by it. Then we also discuss it in the men to men's program. Boy, you should be, I mean, it was very amazing how much men call in to explain that they didn't know that AIDS existed. So that's why they were doing that.
Do you think they honestly didn't know it existed?
Yes, there is not much education about AIDS. There is much education about tuberculosis and other diseases like malaria, but not much about AIDS at all.
What are some of the myths about AIDS that are circulating in Sierra Leone? And what is some of the most important information you think you have to broadcast in order to combat these myths?
People believe that AIDS is from Europe. It's from America. It does not exist there. And it's a man-made disease. And they don't believe it because of the marital status. You know, we have polygamous homes where the women basically don't have much saying. They don't have control over their men to decide how many women you can have. In fact, whether you should have a relationship out of your married home. So these people shift the burden of AIDS to another community. They never accept that it is within their community. They don't. They don't believe it is there. I think that's the most serious one that I will really bring out. And that is why we are trying to combat that. You have to realize it is there. Listen to this lady. Listen to the doctor. Listen to what we're telling you about the statistics. But the problem here is most of the reporters in Sierra Leone are not scientifically educated about AIDS. And I think that's one area we need to look at.
My guest is Andrew Kroma. We're talking about the radio station he founded in the city of Bow in Sierra Leone. We'll talk more after a break. This is Fresh Air. If you're just joining us, my guest is Andrew Kroma, and he is from Sierra Leone. He founded and runs a radio station in Bow, which is a city in Sierra Leone. And it's a radio station that has been attacked several times because of the information that it has presented that has challenged the government, challenged the rebels, and also challenged myths about AIDS. Did you study broadcasting or journalism at all?
No, I just believe in the truth. I'm an economist. I work as a research assistant for a very hard professor. And he will tell me, I remember the first time I wrote, he told me to go in and searching for data. I came up with 8 pages, and he said, God, no, I need only 1 page, and I should let you know that out of the 1 page, I'm going to reduce it to just 1 paragraph, so please go back and do it, and I need it in 2 hours. That, to me, always kept me on the line that whoever you're preparing what for, especially a document, you're trying to give information to somebody, you must thoroughly research it, and it must be important, and it must be very interesting to the people. So that has been my guide, and I've used this to run the radio station. I have actually sacked a board who did not go down with the mission. I have sacked 3 news directors. There was one time I suspended the whole newsroom and decided that they should go in for 1 week training on how to report in a violent environment.
What advice do you give your staff about how to report on a violent situation so that the information gets on the air and the staff doesn't get killed in the process?
Stay with the truth. That's one. And secondly, make sure you're not taking side. You are playing a role where you're trying to build, to create dialogue. So you don't try to favor any one group. You must balance your story. But that was very key in our reporting on the conflict, because you're looking at 2 sides. Sometimes, in fact, it became 3 sides. You have the civilians in between there. So your obligation is to the civilians to be able to decide, to listen to both sides. So that's why you go down to one side and interview, and go to the other side and interview. You stay with the truth, and nothing but the truth. Stay with it, and you are okay. So that you have the opportunity for people to believe you. I have an inscript on the wall, believability, that people must believe in what you're doing. They must believe in what you're seeing every day. And today, we have a staff that's very, very much committed to the truth.
Your radio station's call letters are KISS. Your radio station is called KISS 104. Now, there have been radio stations in the United States with those same call letters. They're usually rock radio stations. How did you come up with KISS as the name for yours?
I'm a rock fan.
Oh.
So, I'm a rock fan. Even this morning, I watch rock on the TV. Remember I went to Duke?
Right.
For some time?
To Duke University.
That was a rock area. So all that was in my mind was get a name, KISS.
So did you name it after the rock group KISS or after another rock radio station that was KISS?
Yes, this is something that was new to me. So I was just picking up a name. So I picked up a name, KISS, KISS, simply because in the United States you have KISS, you have Capital Radio, this radio. So I chose KISS.
Okay. So do you think most of the people in Bo, where you broadcast in Sierra Leone, do you think most of them have radios? And what kind of radios do they have?
That's one of the success stories, that we have made people to rely on radio. So I have pictures even in my bag with people who use their small transistor radios with them on the farm, on the village, small part village roads. They have their radios with them close to their ears. They hold their machete in one hand and the radio on the other hand. I've gone to some of the farms where you find children scaring birds away from the rice farm, and they have their radio sitting there. We have a program, we have music programs like Amulemba. It plays the kind of music they like. So they are always listening to those music and the program on their farm, on their job. So it's those small transistor radios. They go a long way, and they have a lot of them around now. It's an increasing number of radios.
Is there any TV?
No. In Bo, except a few rich diamond dealers, they have TV and video cassette players with them. But no television station that covers Bo.
What about written newspapers?
None in Bo, except Freetown.
So if you want information, you got to turn on the radio.
Yes.
What's the next big issue you're going to have to cover when you go home to Sierra Leone?
We have two transitions now that we need to make sure that we go through them properly. One is transition from war to peace. We need to make sure people contribute to development positively. And then we have transition to a true democracy. There's election coming. We want to have massive voter education. People must be educated. We must have political dialogues so that people at the end will accept the election result.
Well, I wish you good luck, and I thank you so much for talking with us.
Thank you very much, Terry.
Andrew Kroma is the founder of two independent radio stations in his country, Sierra Leone. We spoke last week during his trip to the United States to study public radio stations here.